This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 31st, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
I was playing in a live tournament the other day, Scott, and it got down the heads up. And my opponent was absolutely wearing her tells on her sleeve.
Wow. Sort of like, you know, Troy Aikman out there in the huddle, the little wrist thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anytime, you know, the arching eyebrows, once you got a good card, the covering of the mouth to conceal excitement. I mean, literally, Joe Navarro could have written Read 'em and Reap 2 based on just her reactions alone.
Was she steepling?
No, you know, not only was she steepling, but she was, like, jumping up and down in her seat, you know, like if something good happened for
happy
her.
Happy feet.
You know, and she thought, like, she thought that she was getting an edge on me when a certain card would come, and I couldn't, and she thought, like, I had no idea that she was going through all this excitement over her great cards and stuff. And, I mean, really, it was so great, there was just no way I could lose. So I need to tell the Ante Up Nation that if you ever want to feel good about your reading ability, make sure you play Go Fish with a 5-year-old girl. My stepson came into town a little while ago, and of course my granddaughter was in tow, and she's like, "Hey, do you want to play Go Fish?" And I was like, "Sure, okay."
$10 a point, babe.
Oh man! Every time, like, she would get like if I said, "Do you have any sixes?" and she'd say, "Go Fish," and she'd be all happy, you know. Then when she said, "Do you have any fives?" and I'd say, "Go Fish," and she'd pick it up, and you knew that she picked up the six, and she couldn't wait. She just could not wait to ask me if I had any sixes, you know. So I so bad wanted to be like, "No, I don't have any sixes," you know. And then she'd be like, "You just asked for a six." And, I mean, it was so obvious, her tells. It was so adorable, you know. She would, like, smirk and giggle when she knew she, like, you know, was going to be able to ask me the next card. It was hilarious.
Wow. So I'm safe to assume that this poor girl is without lunch money for the rest of this year?
Yeah, but I fed her while she was here.
Oh,
so
okay. All right, good.
It was
good.
A wash, you know.
Fattened her up a little bit, so, you know. Very nice, very nice. Well played.
But, you know, every time she comes here, she takes the chips out of my case, and she plays with them, and she loves to play cards, and she likes to stack them and stuff. So I'm working on it. Every time I see her, I start to tell her a little more about cards and poker, and hopefully she'll be the next Jennifer Harmon, you know?
Excellent. Very good.
So anyway, I just had to tell everybody about that. I love that. It was a great time. I was glad she was here. And, yeah, really, if you want to feel good about your poker tell reading ability, just, you know, play cards with a 5-year-old.
Now, did you invite her to play in any of those great anti-up tournaments on PokerStars.com?
You tell you what, she's better on the internet than I am.
I wonder what an anti-up tournament, Go Fish tournament would be like. And of course, what I'm talking about is not our anti-up Intercontinental Poker Series Apes, which is also on PokerStars.com, but the good folks at PokerStars actually went out and named a type of tournament after our show.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? I've been seeing those for a while and wondering what the hell they are.
Well, first of all, we've gotten very, very good royalties off of this, which I have not shared with you. So But you know where I live. But no, no, it really has nothing to do with our show. But here's the deal. These are tournaments where the blinds stay the same for the entire tournament. But the ante, you start with antes in the very first level, and they continue to increase throughout the rest of the tournament.
Weird.
It was really, really cool. And what's really cool about it is they do them in, I assume they do them in a couple different games, but I always play the No Limit Omaha 8 version.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's No Limit is really key here because, you know, the first time I sat down to play one, I was trying to figure out how to play, and I was playing my kind of normal, tight, aggressive kind of style. And then all of a sudden, like, a book fell off the bookcase and knocked me in the head and said, Scott, you're a moron!
I know, I was just thinking the same thing.
You have to play completely different in this.
Absolutely.
So I totally started to crush him after that because the thing is that particularly in Omaha 8, you almost always have infinite odds to limp in.
Yeah.
Free flop and hope you catch that miracle flop even if you have like 9993 or something terrible like that. You just you never know. I mean, it's like $5 to call, and the pot sometimes, you know, if it gets later on, is like a couple thousand to start with. I played a lot of them. I think they're fun. And then particularly, like I said, the No Limit version, because, you know, Omaha East normally played Paw Limit, and the reason is, you know, so you don't move all in and, you know, kill people's odds and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is No Limit, so what I found is I'm limping in every single pot. And if I got a good hand, you better believe I am raising big time preflop. I don't want any of these other interlopers coming in with their 9993s and snapping me off. In fact, if I got pocket aces, I'm probably pushing all in and hoping somebody calls and it holds up.
So you said you're crushing them? You're doing really well in these?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been a while since I played them, actually. I got excited like most things and played a bunch in a row, and then I've kind of slowed down and played some other things. But they're a heck of a lot of fun, so I certainly encourage people to check them out, and you know, $5. I think they're probably somewhere probably a little cheaper. I mean, it's a fun way of playing.
Awesome.
Particularly if you're an action junkie and want to play every hand.
I can't believe that you didn't adjust early on, thinking, you know, the antes are out there. Everyone says get aggressive
with
those antes.
Oh my god, it was just insane.
That's
but you
awesome.
Know, then I started realizing, I look at the pot, I'm like, why did I just fold that?
Well, you know,
I had
Scott,
47-1.
We got a couple of guests on the show today, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of me and you going on and on about how terrible we play and how terrible our opponents play, we should probably just move on to the Ante Up News Desk and crank out this little part.
This first thing. Excellent. All right, here we go.
All right.
Hearing that the Poker Players Alliance Executive Director John Pappas calls very important will be held August 21st over the freeze of $14 million in online gaming money from Account Services, a payment provider. Pappas says the PPA has been approved to submit a brief in the case and is ready to testify if needed. The PPA's brief, according to Poker News Daily, will likely focus on a December study by Sigital and PokerStars, revealing that out of 103 million cash game hands, Chris, 103 million cash game hands studied on the world's largest online poker site, three-quarters of them did not go to showdown.
Wow. Well, the other one quarter were all my hands, and they all did go to showdown. Well, I'm glad they're going to have that meeting, because at least $2 million of that money is mine. That's
very good, very good. speaking of PokerStars, PokerStars has begun its America's Cup of Poker Tournament Series. Tournaments cost no more than $5.50, and entrants will compete to play for one of 13 nationalities involved, all of them in the Americas, you know, Canada down to South America.
Oh, yeah.
Winning players will play live in Argentina for a $250,000 prize pool and be paired up with Team PokerStars pros. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in my Italian buddies, my new best friends. Those two guys, they can't play, but yeah, it sounds like a good deal.
Well, they could probably play in the Europe's Cup.
Yeah.
Whenever they do that. And finally, Andy Duke, fresh off the big business TV show Celebrity Apprentice, was asked by USA Today to provide Texas Hold'em tips that would apply to the business world. Among Duke's tips, looking for patterns in your opponents, and that bluffing is a, quote, sexy concept that's widely overused.
That's good. Good points, I guess. Makes sense, you know. But, you know, I hear the hotline ringing, and I wonder if it's Andy calling us to give us some more on that info. I'm not sure. It might be her.
Let's find out.
All right, let's take a listen.
Hey, Chris. Scott, this is Dan from Mobile. Listen, I really like your show, but that's not why I called. I've been playing it full tilt for just the free tokens, and I get on the final table, I would say 95% of the time. I seem to be pretty good at, you know, knowing how to play and playing, but I'm being encouraged by a few of my friends that, you know, if I am so good, I need to move on to a money table. And I just wonder if you could throw out some points. I don't know, you know, if things are going to change. Is it going to be the same? You know, I'm going to play in probably the 5-10 games. Or I thought about playing in the tournament. I play 95% of the time in the tournaments, and I do quite well at them. So I'm kind of confused. I don't know which way to go. Should I stick with tournament play, or should I do the sit and goes?
Duh, it was not Andy, but it was Dan from Mobile. Mobile.
Mobile.
That's how Bob Dylan says it. Yeah, I used to live in Pensacola. I'm fine. I used to spend a lot of time in Mobile.
We've talked about this a lot on the show.
Yeah, we do get this question a lot. But, you know, we get new listeners all the time. So.
Yeah, no, and I, especially me, though, because I used to be one of the ones that used to play a lot of play money, not get stressed out, and then making the transition. And I always told them, you know, if you're going to make a transition, just do it slowly and do it small. And, you know, the transition is different. I mean, you can even ask my wife. You know, she used to play play money all the time. And then when she played the real cash game money, it was totally different. And it is. It's different.
Yeah. Well, very, very good, very good. And Dan, we appreciate you calling the hotline, and that number again is 813-448-1120. If you'd like to be just like Dan from Mobile and win some wonderful swag, and Dan, you're going to like this. You want a T-shirt from HighRollerClothing.com, one of our new partners. These are great shirts. And we will ship that out to you if you send us your address. And if you, too, would like a HighRollerClothing.com T-shirt, you could call the hotline, send us a mailbag, send us a hand of the week, or you could send us a picture of you holding your Anti-Up magazine or wearing your Anti-Up clothing somewhere really cool in the world.
Yeah.
And email to us, and we'll run it in the magazine, and you'll get one of HighRollerClothing.com's Anti-Up shirts, which are even cooler.
We got some really, really cool photos over the next couple of months, and two of them are Middle East photos.
Yeah, yeah.
Taken from the Middle East, so that's pretty cool. So we're real excited about that. You know what? I want to do the mailbags, guys, okay?
All right. You could do the mailbag this week.
This comes from Jamin Drummond. I'm hoping that's how you pronounce his first
name. Yeah, longtime listener from Australia.
From Australia. And what better name other than, like, Chip Jett? I mean, what better name? Jamin the Pot Drummond is what his nickname probably would be. But... he says he wants to know if it's ethical for someone to continue playing... when you're asking for a break, when you're playing like online in a tournament, you get heads up. He said he played in a tournament recently, got a heads up, and told the guy to be right back in a minute. He had a 6-1 chip lead when he went away. He had to do something in the house that couldn't wait, or some sort of emergency. I'm sure the water was spilling out of the toilet or something. Maybe they call it the loo down there. I'm not sure. But comes back. It's like 45 seconds later, and the guy had played 12 pots and taken like 95% of his stack. He's like, what the fark? So he wants to know, is that bad ethics or just poker?
Now, just poker, buddy.
No, 100%, Scott. This is bad ethics. I'm sorry.
I disagree.
We can go with the whole legal thing like we did before. Yes, it's legal to do that. But legality and ethical are not the same. And my friend, I am telling you, this is unethical. The guy asked to... be right back. It wasn't like he was, you know, I mean, I can understand maybe the blinds were really high and the guy was like, screw you, I can't wait because the clock is ticking and, you know, maybe that's why he could have done it. But to play 12 pots in 40 seconds, it's totally unethical.
All right, well, let's say this. Our hero here did not say whether this guy agreed to a break.
That's true.
Just the fact that you ask a break doesn't necessarily mean that it'd be different. If this guy said, oh, yeah, sure, no problem, I'll wait, and then did it, that's really bad. All right, but we have no evidence here that the guy even acknowledged it. And sure, heads up, you're going to pay attention to the chat. But, you know, sometimes people turn the chat off. And even if they don't turn it off, you're doing other things. You're not paying attention. So we also don't know for sure whether this opponent even saw the message.
True.
So that's on one side. But let's just say for a minute that the guy did see it, didn't acknowledge it, just said, maybe I'll take advantage of the guy here. I'm hard-pressed to say that he's anything more than a douche. I'm not saying it's wrong. I mean, here's the thing. Let's say I'm at home, and this has happened a number of times in the Long household, all right?
Uh-huh.
I've been sitting there playing a sit-and-go. I thought I was going to get knocked out early like I always do. So I turned the clock back, and I'm like, all right, I can be done by 7 o'clock when the wife wants to go to dinner.
Uh-huh.
And then I go off, and I play well, and I'm up, heads up at the end, and it's like 7:05. and Mrs. Long is right behind me, stomping the foot, giving me that evil eye. And she's like, are you going to finish this thing and go to dinner, or am I going to dinner by myself and meeting a really hot guy and not ever coming back? And all of a sudden, my opponent on the other end goes, hey, you know what? I got something to do. Do you mind if I just go run off for a little bit? I'll be right back. All right. My allegiance is to the woman I married, not to this unknown guy online that all of a sudden has an emergency is better than mine. So I don't feel any need to necessarily, if you're inconveniencing me by having something going on in your life, I feel bad for you, but if I got somewhere else to be, I'm sorry. I'm taking this bad boy down.
Man, you know what? You have fallen from grace, buddy. This is coming from the guy who just a few short months ago said, we have to say S-O-L on the show. Now you're calling people douches. This is awesome. But the other thing is, just a few short months ago, we're talking about going from table to table with a stack that you won from one table, and now you can't. But now you're saying it's okay. Now, here's the thing. I agree. If the guy didn't respond to him when he said, hey, man, I got an emergency. I'll be right back. I promise. If he didn't say anything, then maybe how does he know the guy didn't have a disconnect and he's not going to wait all night and then the blinds are going to screw him because he's got a 6-1 deficit he's got to overcome? Okay, that's understandable. Maybe the guy doesn't speak English, too, and that's another thing. But if the guy did have sort of like, yeah, all right, hurry up kind of thing, and then just did it, totally unethical.
Yeah, well.
But I agree with you that if the guy didn't, you never know if the guy saw the message or if he speaks English or, whatever. So, but I took it from the way he worded this letter, I took it that the guy kind of like was like, yeah, all right, hurry up or so. Or they spoke English and they've talked back and forth. That's the way I took it. But if that's not the case, then, whatever.
Boy, I'm going to get you a copy. Maybe on the swag shelf, what we should get you is a copy of that great Jumping to Conclusions game from Office Space. Wow, you're just like inventing stuff in this letter that's not there.
All right, well, I guess so. I don't know. That's me, though. That's the Italian blood boiling in me.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we appreciate the mailbag letter to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We do not have a copy of Jump to the Conclusions board game, but we would love to send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. And, next time, take a leak at the break, and everything will be fine.
An emergency was a leak at the break. Oh, my God. All right. So, Scott, we have a new way to do one-minute mystery for the time being, and it's a little different. We're not going to play the first part and then play the second part because it wouldn't make sense. So we know what happened last week. We're going to talk a little bit about it real quick. We had Ace of Hearts, Queen of Spades, and a small blind, and there was a raise to us. We re-raised, and we got a call, and we saw the flop of 10-4-6. And now what do we do? So you started off, and we did write this out, what we thought we would do last week. So
right.
What would you do?
Well, we took control of this hand pre-flop, so I think we have to put out a bet. This was kind of an old milquetoast kind of flop.
Yeah.
If you're going to take the lead pre-flop and then not bet on a flop like this, then you don't have any business taking the lead pre-flop. So I got to put out a bet. I'm going to say maybe half pot.
Yeah. I agree with you, but only because we re-raised do I feel like I need to put out a bet here. And the re-raise, like you said, took control of the betting. I'm telling this person that I have a hand that's better than his hand, and I'm going to show you no matter what comes out. And so I'm going to bet out, and probably about 3/4 of the pot. But here's the thing. If I feel any resistance, I need to be done with this hand if I don't improve on the turn. That's just the way it goes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But,
okay, cool.
We're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. I'm just saying.
We hope that we don't get there, I think, too.
Yeah. Well, we also put it out there for the forum, and again, the consensus was that it's a weak board, and since we raised or re-raised pre-flop, the best action was a continuation bet of 500 to 650. Some people discussed check calling or check raising, but it seems like the check raising idea might not work, even though there might be a case made for check calling. So we're going to listen to now the new segment. This will tell us what happened, and then we'll learn our new mystery for next week.
Welcome to Episode 3. If you recall the last episode, we had just doubled up and are now playing Ace-Queen out of position. And when it comes to post-flop play now, it's a game of chicken. I already raised pre-flop, so I feel like I should continue. But the problem is I'm betting 500 to win 700, and already the pot is bigger than we want in level 2 of this tournament with a missed flop. My hope here is that when I bet, he'll be thinking the exact same thing I am, and he'll fold.
We can't be right all the time.
After a short delay, the mid-position player shoves all in, and just as I feared, I'll be folding my air. We have now taken a hit of 1,000 chips, no small amount, and it's really too early to use this to set up a future play. Sometimes ABC poker just isn't the way to go. I see now there's a third option with Ace-King in the small blind in level 2. So much for butthead quotes. So onward and upward we go. We're at the 40-80 level now, just approaching the first break. We are under the gun plus one, and I'm going to raise to 3x to 240 with jack-jack. Player on my immediate left flat calls and the others all fold. We see a flop of queen of diamonds, seven of clubs, five of clubs. Worried now about pot size, I check, and our player bets 320 into the 600, which I call. The turn is the six of clubs. What do you want to do now?
And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Joining us today, Chris, is a former tournament director for the World Series of Poker, who's now leading the poker operations of a very unique new event. This September, we'll see the launch of the Sports Legends Challenge, which will pair A-list sports celebrities with A-list poker pros and everyday Joes like us, Chris, for fun and sun and TV exposure, too, in the Bahamas. Leading the poker operations of the event is Robert Daly, a man with a lengthy resume in the poker world. Robert, thanks you for joining us today.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. This Sports Legends Challenge is a very unique event with some very unusual and dynamics that just come to surface. For instance, some of these sports legends want to meet the other sports legends, which is something we really didn't perceive when we first put this whole project together, but just about every one of our sports legends wants to meet Sugar Ray Leonard for some reason, and I do too. He would be my pick if I was going to pair with anyone. I think I'd want to pick Sugar Ray, and it seems like these other sports legends want to do the same. It's a very unique dynamic we didn't count on happening.
Excellent. So it's a great event, and it's also a little complicated, I know, but go ahead and tell us what people are going to, our listeners will do if they book this trip and go out there and play.
Well, great. Be glad to go over that with you. Well, we're going to have the ability for the participant to just rub shoulders and hang out with these sports legends and these poker professionals. We have five individual daily poker tournaments. We have a TV tournament that will be shown on Fox Sports, pardon me, that's going to give away a winner-take-all million-dollar prize pool. We're going to have blackjack tournaments, slots tournaments, and a huge, actually three very large golf tournaments.
Wow.
All sandwiched into these four-day period. It's just going to be absolutely the best and most phenomenal tournament I have ever been associated with.
Well, that's saying a lot since you ran the World Series of Poker, so that sounds very good.
It is. Well, it is, actually. And, of course, they're going to be able to win up to $10 million in all of these events, you know, depending on exactly how many people enter. But I've never seen an event with so many dynamics. You know, the World Series of Poker lasts for 48 days. It has, in 2009, had 57 bracelet events. And it's just pure poker from 24/7 for a 48-day period. But this Sports Legends Challenge has a dynamic that I've never seen. It's really a sports fantasy more than a poker tournament or blackjack or slots or golf. It's just the ability to be with these sports legends and just talk to them as you wish. You're going to be socializing. There's going to be parties and banquets and awards meetings. It's really a fantastic opportunity if you are a sports fan to get to know your sports legend and have a great time with them on a one-to-one basis.
Now, you had mentioned a lot of activities there and a lot of different tournaments and things to do. Will the person who goes to this have to pick and choose what they want to do, or will there be a chance for them to still participate in all this since it's only 4 days long?
Well, actually, they can participate in any of the tournaments they wish. They're going to be given 10,000 Sports Legends credits, and they can enter any of these events as whatever their interest might be, as long as their Sports Legends credits hold out, of course.
Okay.
So they can enter all five. They can enter all five of the poker tournaments. They can enter about 20 of the blackjack tournaments. We're holding 28 total. So there's enough Sports Legends credits for them to do anything they wish. They're not going to be limited to one particular event. They don't have to say, okay, I'm going to play golf and I won't be able to play the rest of them. Okay. Now they can play golf. They can play blackjack. They can play slots. And, of course, they can play poker.
Now, are the tournaments, or do they pay out in credits so people can win more credits to keep playing, or do they pay out in cash, or both, I guess?
Oh, actually, they pay out in cash, really. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it all pays out in cash, and of course, I mentioned earlier that it would be up to around $10 million in prize pool, total prize pool for all the events, with the big poker tournaments having a $1 million winner-take-all purse.
Wow.
Now, since this is a poker show, can you tell us a little more a bit about the poker tournaments and what goes on there?
Yeah, of course I can. The event runs Monday through Thursday. So on Monday and Tuesday, we're going to have two tournaments per day, starting one at 10 a.m., one starting at 6 p.m. And they're individual tournaments, standalone tournaments. We're going to pay 10% of the entrants who are going to be in the prize pool. The top five finishers will move forward to the tournament day on the All-Star Tournament on Thursday. And on Wednesday, we'll have an additional tournament for a total of five. So they're standalone tournaments. You can win individual prize money, plus the top five of each one of those tournaments moves forward to the championship day on Thursday.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's now really a unique concept.
Now, you've lined up a very impressive collection of 25 poker pros, including Johnny Chan, Gavin Smith, Andy Duke. You mentioned how much interaction your guests will have with the sports celebrities. Will they also have a lot of interaction with poker pros?
Oh, absolutely. Poker pros, actually, maybe for the first time in history, the poker professionals will not be permitted to play poker. They're there to mentor and coach. And on the final day, on the championship day, of course, a coach will be assigned to one of the legends and one of the participants, which will be a two-person team. And the poker coach will be assigned, one poker coach will be assigned to each team, and he will coach and mentor that team, but he will not be permitted to play. And each two-man team will play the same chip stack. On a rotating basis, we're going to have a 50-minute level. They'll play 20. Each person will play 25 minutes of that 50-minute level, and the poker coach is there just to coach and mentor that particular team.
Now, you obviously have a lot of big sports celebrities who are coming out, and they are going to be playing poker. and probably needing a lot of instruction, but do you know, are any of these celebrities decent poker players? Do you have any inside knowledge on any of them?
Well, actually, we know that Rocco Mediate plays poker very well. There's a couple of others that do also. But there's some that say, look, help me. I don't know much about it. I'm kind of intimidated about this casino-style poker tournament thing. So we'll be coaching them and making them feel better and increasing their comfort level before the big event. And we'll have, actually, the World Series of Poker will be sending their poker academy to the event to help teach anyone that wishes to learn just basic poker skills or how the tournament runs, just to kind of help their comfort zone. So we do have poker instruction planned during the event and also prior to. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. All
right, Robert, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'd watch out for Rocco Mediate. He's
already. So your career has spanned more than 30 years. You've done a lot of great stuff in poker, Robert. So what was it that drew you to this event?
Well, it's kind of strange. You know, I'm sort of a freelance tournament director, and I got the call. I was introduced to the organizer of the Sports Legend Challenge through Rick Berry, our commissioner. And before I take any assignments, I always research it and see, you know, is it the type of event I'd like to lend my name to and actually participate in? And boy, it didn't take long. Within 10 minutes of research, I said, I want this. And I was calling this guy and saying, look, let me in. I want to do this. And here's my resume. And of course, he did due diligence. But I was certainly so pleased to have this invitation, thanks to Rick Berry. And I'm so pleased to be part of it and lend my name to it and bring that caliber of expertise on the poker side anyway to this particular event. It's just something this event deserves. There's never been anything like it that I know of. And it may set the standard. I mean, I'm just left the World Series of Poker a few days ago, and the buzz there is that this is really going to set the standard for these type of events in the future. This will be the new yardstick.
So what do you think? What do you think's harder, putting together an event like this, or running something massive like the World Series of Poker?
Oh, gee. Well, the World Series of Poker is a true acid test, boy. I mean, it'll take every single skill that you have over and over and over each and every day. And this is just a different type of animal. It's not pressure-packed like the World Series of Poker. You don't have 20 people waiting in line to solve a problem. It's just everyone here is involved with it, is very competent individuals that's putting this together. They're the top professionals in this type of industry. And it's just such a pleasure. I feel like I'm kind of like on vacation. Okay, do you have anything for me to do, guys? I'm ready to do something. No, it's all done. And all of the participants are so happy. They're calling. I mean, I get calls every day. Look, can you get me in? I know I'm late here asking you, but can I come? Can I be part of this? And, you know, we're working on new contracts now with Scotty Wynn, who has expressed interest, and some other big names like that as well. And on the sports legend side, we just signed some very contemporary stars. For instance, in the mixed martial arts, we have Randy Couture that's signed. In the X Games, we have Tony Hawk. This has brought a lot of interest to the particular event, particularly from the younger sports fans. So we're continually developing more and more athletes that can draw to the full spectrum of the sports fans. And I tell you, just the difference between World Series and poker and this is like a vacation. It's just everyone is so interested. They want to do such a great performance and have such a great event, and the World Series of Poker is just pressure and pressure and pressure every minute. And, I remember going through the World Series. I remember going through about 55 days of 16, 18-hour days, and
I mean, it's the time it's over, I lost a lot of weight. I wanted a vacation. I mean, it was just, I just wanted some time, you know, to recover from it. But I don't have that pressure in this. It's just such a different atmosphere.
Jeez.
Now, this event's going to be held at the absolute gorgeous Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas. They don't have poker year-round there, obviously, but they have held big events like that before. What are kind of some of the logistical problems maybe in setting up a huge tournament or series of tournaments like this in a facility that doesn't normally host them?
Well, actually, you would think there would be some huge obstacles, but the Atlantis has had a couple of big events in the past and will continue to have them, other than ours, of course. And they're just such a blessing to work with. They say, here's what we can do, and, you know, just work within it. And, boy, they've just been totally supportive. They're, you know, we have to get temporary gaming license for the people we bring in, our customs issues, bringing in tables and other types of supplies. They're right there supporting us 100% of the way, and that makes everything so much easier than just to kind of have to force your way into a venue that really doesn't understand what you're doing and only wants you there for the money. It's just that, you know, for the things that the money you can spend on property. But the Atlantis is really on top of everything. They're really helping us 100%. That makes it so much more easier to get things accomplished. We don't have any customs issues. We don't have any issues with the gaming control board there in the Bahamas. And so they're just totally supportive, and it could be just the opposite if they didn't provide that much support, of course. But we're doing great, and they're looking forward to the event also.
Now, tournament directors who are kind of famous, sort of, you know, like you and Matt Savage, you guys are all starting to get a part of this industry where you're running these mega special events. You know, given that the numbers for poker tournaments, aside from the World Series this year, are kind of starting to come down, do you feel like there's still some real growth opportunity in tournament poker these days?
Well, I do. I feel there's, you know, poker itself is still just as popular as it's always been. And what I've noticed, particularly with the World Series, and I wasn't there the entire time of the World Series, but I was there for just before the main event. I played in the main event myself. But what I find is the lower buy-ins, 2,500 and less, the attendance really seems to be growing. And it was the higher buy-ins, 5,000, 3,000, 5,000 and above, where the attendance seemed to be down. So I think maybe, I don't think the economy has really affected the popularity of poker. I see these big charity events now, because I do charity events as well. I'm going to California next month for two, and then to Vegas for one, following those two in California. And the attendance is really up in the big charity events. And, of course, that's another indication if poker is still popular and people want to play, is they're attending these charity events, poker charity events, and in greater numbers than they have in the past. So I think poker is popular, will continue to be popular, and it doesn't appear to be affected by the economy that much. I think there is some effect on it, but I think it's at the higher level denominations of the buy-ins.
Well, terrific, Robert. Well, we appreciate you taking some time today, and we wish you the best of luck with the Sports Legends Challenge. And real quickly, I just want to fill in some details for any uppers that might be interested in going. You know, if you purchase a package, it comes with that shared tournament entry that you mentioned, all those credits, two VIP passes for all the parties, two VIP passes for all the special events that are going on, like the WSOP Academy you mentioned, and five nights, like we said, at the wonderful Atlantis Paradise Island. And we're also very happy to say that Sports Legends Challenge is offering a really good deal for Anti-Up listeners. If you use promo code 2039, the price is only $4,499 per person based on double occupancy. Sounds like you got a lot of great stuff going on, Robert, for that price. So we wish you luck, and have fun out in the Bahamas.
Well, thank you very much. I just want to end it by saying that I heard Joe Namath the other day on an interview say that the Sports Legends Challenge is the best ticket in town. So I couldn't agree more. That kind of sums it up. I appreciate the interview and the opportunity to talk about the Sports Legends, and I hope to see everyone in the Bahamas at the wonderful Atlantis Paradise Island resort. So thank you all very much. I appreciate it kindly.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Chris!
Yes?
You've been demoted, buddy.
You know, that's fine. Because
people have been on us. They're like, you know, do more on hand analysis. Talk more about Columbo. We want to hear more about this stuff. And so we did that. You know, we listened. And then they're like, you know, you haven't really had the pros on to do the hands of the week. And, you know, no offense, but you guys kind of suck. So can you bring somebody on that actually knows how to play poker? And, of course, we were offended.
Of course.
But who rode in on his white horse when we're out in Las Vegas and said, dudes, you need to have me on the show. I am Lee freaking Childs. And we said, you know what, Lee? That sounds great. So Lee, we're happy to have you.
And, thanks for having me.
Excellent. And we're going to have you on occasion. You've been you're being very generous with your time. You know, you're busy out there winning lots of money playing poker and teaching a lot of folks at AcumenPoker.net how to be better players.
Yep.
And but you're taking some time now, and you're going to analyze a couple hands for us going in the future. So we're happy to have you, man.
I'm glad to be here. You know, it's really funny. When I brought that up, I had told you guys I was a couple of episodes behind because I'd just been out at the World Series playing so much and hadn't been able to listen to the podcast. And then each of the ones I was listening to on the plane, I just went out to do a WPT boot camp, our advanced cash camp. And like every episode, you guys were talking about that. So I actually didn't know you were getting berated by the Ante Up Nation about this when I told you that. I do so much hand analysis with my own students and with the boot camp students and just going through my own play that every time I'm listening, I'm like, man, I'd love to say something about this, or I have some extra stuff that I think would benefit people. So, yeah, this sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
So, oh, and then, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Is someone eating, like, with chopsticks in the background there? I don't know what's going on, but, I mean, I can hear, like, chopsticks going on or something in the background. What is that?
I don't know.
You're not sharing your lunch with us, Lee? That's not cool.
It might have been me. I had, like, a mint, so I'm sure that's what it was.
A mint.
It's gone. You can leave that out now.
Awesome. All right, so I'm sure most of our listeners, if they're true Antioch Nationals, know who our good buddy Lee Childs is. But for those that may be new, Lee made the final table, the main event, the big one, a couple years back. And since then, he's gone on. He does all kinds of World Poker Tour boot camp stuff. And he's the founder of AcumenPoker.net. So tell our folks a little bit about what you do at Acumen Poker, and if they like your hand analysis more than they like Chris and I's, what they would find if they actually gave you a little cash.
Wow, that would be a huge compliment. Yeah, with Acumen Poker, what I do is a lot of small group and individual teaching and coaching. I have some people that may come to me just for, like, you know, three or four lessons. I have some people that come to my small group training classes that I have from time to time that are usually like 6 to 12 people. I'm actually starting to look at doing some web-based group sessions where we use web conferencing. I have probably hundreds, if not almost thousands of hands now that I've played online that I save when any kind of interesting hand comes up that I play, and then I save it off immediately so that I can pull it up in hand replayers if it has any kind of, like, educational value, or, you know, I think just, you know, really illustrates an interesting concept, an abnormal concept where something kind of falls outside of normal betting patterns and someone shows up with a hand that you would never expect. So I have lots of different hands that I can use for these types of sessions. You know, and I also have my standard, like, for some of my more basic classes, I have my standard PowerPoints and stuff where we almost start from the beginning. You know, and it's people that have had 1 to 2 years of experience, kind of your intermediate poker players, people that are serious about poker. It's, you know, not to learn, okay, we start with two hole cards and, and these are the blinds and that kind of stuff. But, you know, like I said, I've had about 4 different group sessions, and I do a lot of work with people on an individual basis, and some people I work with on kind of a long-term coaching basis as well.
What does your dog think of your poker instruction?
Wow.
I'm just curious.
He's upstairs. He's a level upstairs from here. You can hear that.
Oh, Chris hears everything. All right, well, let's get into a hand here. Because we love the Antiup Nation so much, Chris.
Yes.
We never want to give them everything they ask for at one time. We like to give them little pebbles. So we brought on world-class pro Lee Childs to analyze these hands. But we're going to give him a penny, two-penny, no-limit cash game hand. That's right, the return of micro-limits. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lee, you're pretty excited about this hand.
I am excited about this hand, and it also brings up a good point that most people, when playing online, should be playing much lower than they play in a live casino anyway. Just this comes up at our WPT camps a lot, where, you know, when people go and play 1-2 in a casino and then they want to play 1-2 online, they're typically making a big mistake, because most of your winning 1-2 player online players will crush 5-10 and sometimes even higher games live, because they're 8 tabling. It's so much harder to get money online. So they play lower and play more tables. So whether you need to step all the way down to 1 cent, 2 cent, that may be a different story. But, you know, you should be starting lower and working your way up, and certainly playing lower than you would play in a casino. So I love that we're doing a 1 cent, 2 cent hand here.
See, we've already learned something already, Chris.
I
haven't even messed the hand up yet. We've already learned something.
Let's just end the show right now.
There we go. Nice talking to you.
All right, so today's hand comes from our new best friend, Alan Manning, all the way from Las Vegas. He is playing 9-handed, 1 cent, 2 cent, no limit, Texas Hold'em. He says the average stack is $2 or less. Most have less, he says. His stack is a sterling $1.94. Says the table's filled with super tight passive play when he sat down. Many of the dozen hands he saw were folded around pre-flop to small raises. Our hero says he was playing very tight as well, too. Very few hands go to the river, and only small parts of one. Little different than the 1 cent, 2 cent I normally see online, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You would expect it to be much looser and people making lots of crazy plays.
You know, don't expect a lot of comments out of me here. We got an all world pro here, so I'm just going to sit back and listen to the comments and, you know, interject here and there, you know. So don't be expecting me to save everybody here, because it ain't going to happen.
Quitter.
Well, you know, the other thing about this is what's important is not the amount of money, but we'll be looking at, you know, the amount of the raise in relation to the blinds and the amount of the calls in relation to the stack and the pot, and those things don't change. And a lot of people make those mistakes because they say, you know, if they're playing lower, well, it's only $2. Well, if $2 is 50% of your stack, then you're like never going to have the right odds to call. So anyway, you know, that's another reason that it's good to do this, because if you do play lower, you still have to stick to some of the basic rules about odds and stack size and pot size.
Okay.
Excellent. All right. So the under the gun folds. Our hero is under the gun plus one with ace of spades, nine of spades. Go ahead, Lee. Impress us with your wisdom with this little bit of information we have here.
Okay. First of all, I hate that he raised here. This is a pretty...
Oh, we haven't told him that he'd raised yet. See, you're jumping ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right.
All right. So we're safe to say that Lee Childs would not raise here then.
Okay, yeah. I'm instantly folding ace nine. Second to act. When you're playing in a cash game, you need to be, for the most part, your default play is going to be pretty tight in early position. You just, you know, the more pots you get involved with in out of position, the more pots you're just simply going to lose. If I'm going to raise with something weaker up front, I'd rather do it with some kind of like smaller suited connector. I'd race with pretty much any pair, you know, and it's okay to fold some small pairs if you're in a particularly aggressive game where people usually re-raise a lot. He's in a tight passive game, so I would be coming in with, you know, any big ace, any pairs in this spot, potentially any suited connectors, knowing that since they are tight players, if they give me action, they probably have a big hand, and my hand's going to be pretty easy to play against theirs. But with an ace nine, I just don't like coming in an early position with an ace nine, even if it's suited.
All right, well, as Lee spoiled already, our hero decides to raise to 8 cents. The action folds around to the big blind, who has a stack that's very similar to ours. He re-raises to 20 cents total. Back to us. What do we do, Lee or Chris?
Chris, what do you do?
Well, if I was playing the Lee Child's method of poker, I wouldn't be in this position. I would have already folded. So if I'm playing this hand and somebody re-raises me and I told them that I was under the gun plus one and coming in for a raise at a tight table, I'm probably telling them that I have a pretty big hand. So for someone to raise me out of position 2.5x more than what I had raised, I would fold if I played this ace-nine the way he played it. Playing it the way I would have played it, I probably wouldn't have done any of this. So, but if I'm in this guy's position and I have to act the way he is in this situation, I'm folding.
Yeah, I think that, well, here's the thing. If this was a tournament setting, I'm going to fold because I know I can't replenish my stack. But in general, when playing a cash game, if you come in raising in early position, you shouldn't ever fold to a standard re-raise. So since he's already got 8 cents in, the guy raises to how much? 20 cents. So it's only 12 cents more. It's only going to be about 6% of his stack. It's a little more than that since he doesn't have quite the full $2 to start the hand. I don't want to set a tone, especially since it's a tight passive table, that I'm willing to raise an early position and fold to a standard re-raise, and it's even a little bit smaller. That said, I think the guy's got a monster, because usually when somebody raises only 2.5x out of position, just like Chris said, it's probably a monster hand. But now I'm going to play this hand like I would any suited connector, where I'm going to play it for two pair or better. And I'm letting any other hands go. I mean, I'm looking for trips, two pair, with just an ace on the board. And if the guy made a continuation bet into me, I would just fold.
All right, very good. Now our hero decides to call, and he says he considered calling to loosen up this very passive table. Do you ever do that, Lee, kind of make a call to kind of change the table dynamics?
Yeah, I mean, I'll play hands, you know, like I'm really looking for more like a you know, suited connector type of hand, suited one gapper type of hand, to get involved with, to hope that that gets shown down and then gives me respect when I come in an early position or if I were to re-raise somebody. For the most of the time in a cash game, you don't have to do a whole lot of that. Most cash games are actually loose enough and people are bad enough that you can play pretty straightforward. They don't really give you respect for what you have in the right positions. But yeah, if you find a ridiculously tight table, then sure, I want to come in with some of those types of hands. Ace nine is just the type of hand that can get you in a lot of trouble unless you have the discipline, once you face some resistance, to really play it for two pair or better and not get too attached to a nine high flop or just an ace high flop.
Well, let's get back to pre-flop before anything happens, before anybody acts. If he's telling us it's a tight passive table and these people are not raising a lot, you know, is there an argument to be for limping with ace nine of spades and seeing a cheap flop? Or if you did limp for 2 cents and then the big blind decides to make it six to go, you've literally gotten to see the same flop for a much more discounted price. So you want to fold right away, but I was just thinking it's such a tight. I mean, you see people all the time in cash games just playing suited aces to try to bust somebody.
Yeah, and it's fine to play suited aces, you know, especially if you can routinely get into a pot for about 5% of your stack or less with any kind of suited ace. That's a pretty good idea. So if by limping and you only expect to get raised every once in a while, you know, that's fine, but you have to then, you're automatically playing it only for two pair or better if you're going to do that. By coming and raising, you're taking control of the pot, and you don't necessarily even have to hit the flop if you stay the pre-flop aggressor. You know, a lot of the times you're going to raise with this hand, maybe somebody calls, you totally miss the flop, you make a continuation bet and just win it. When you limp in, you are just changing your situation there, where you have to have the discipline to now play this hand for two pair or better to play any kind of sizable pot.
Right.
You know, and when we're playing cash games, we're really looking to get ourselves into situations where we can win our opponent's stacks. We're not looking to steal blinds and annies. We're not really looking to win these little tiny pots. You know, winning small pots are fine, but we're just really trying to find these ideal situations where we can actually stack somebody. And just by limping and hoping to catch flops and hoping they catch a lesser piece that they're willing to stack off for, that's just way too passive for me and way too much hoping involved. I'd rather just take control there.
Excellent.
Okay. All right, the pot's at 40 cents. A flop comes 9 of hearts, ace of hearts, 3 of hearts. So we got our two pair that we were hoping for, but it's a all heart board. And the big blind checks to us.
Yeah, we love this flop. You're never heads up. You're never going to give somebody for having their 1%, less than 1% chance of flopping a flush. Plus, they re-raised our early position raise. So, you know, unless they're doing that with something like a king, queen of hearts, king, jack of hearts, it's just unlikely the way this table's been described. So unless this guy has two aces or two nines, I'm just extremely comfortable with this flop and at this point willing to play for my sack on this board.
So at this point, are you putting him on a range of hands then? Are you thinking to yourself, if I bet out here, this guy checks because he's afraid of the ace. If I bet out here and he calls, he's probably got king of hearts, king of spades, something like that. Is that what you do? Is that your thought process after you bet?
Once he checks this board, he's most likely got kings, queens, jacks, tens, something like that. I would expect if he had a heart in his hand, then he would go ahead and make a continuation bet. The other option is that he's got two aces or two nines and he's trying to be a trappy player. So when he checks here, people usually check because they flop a monster or because they're scared, right? I mean, it's kind of weird for this player to have re-raised our early position raise and now bet out. So now check. So it seems like he either flopped a set or he probably just missed and he's wanting to see what we're going to do.
Okay.
Well, what we do is bet out 20 cents, and we are quickly re-raised to 56 cents.
That's a weird number.
Yeah, both numbers are kind of weird. I'm gonna bet 25 to 30 cents into this 40-cent pot. I'm gonna go ahead and, you know, I'm gonna make him pay if he is. If he does have, you know, like a pair with the flush draw, you know, we obviously don't have any hearts. We've got the two pair. We've got our backup outs for filling up as well. But just to bet 20 cents, only betting half the pot, I'd like to go about 2/3 to 3/4 of the pot here. The re-raise pretty quickly to 56 is kind of strange. And it's going to make me a little bit concerned that maybe he actually did flop a set, but I'm still not going anywhere at this point. I think if he's going to play it trappy, like a set, or if he's just got some kind of flush draw, like he still may have those kings, queens, or jacks with the heart, and he's making one of these let me see where I'm at kind of quick raises, I think.
Okay, well then, what would you do? You know, since you've bet, and if you're in his shoes now, you've bet 20, which obviously you're not happy about, but it's what happened, and now you're in his shoes, and now he's facing a 36-cent raise. What do you do here?
I'm raising here.
Okay.
And since he made it 56 cents, yeah, my chips are getting in the middle. And the reason I want to do that is I played this hand for two pair or better. I've flopped my two pair. If he's got aces, nines, or the very unlikely threes, God bless him, and I'm just going to lose my stack. But I also want to get the money in right here because I don't want, you know, if he's got ace-king with the ace of hearts or two kings with the king of hearts, you know, I don't want the board to stay dry for him if he's got a hand he is willing to go with. And I also don't want scare cards coming to kill my action. If he's got just ace-king with no hearts, then, you know, another heart might kill my action. If I flop a set or flop the top two pair in this spot, I want to go ahead and get the money in at this point.
Now, to deviate a little bit here, Lee, how often do you see this in your teaching, players making a decision, I'm playing this hand for this, and then deviating from it, even if it does happen? I mean, for example, you're talking about, I want two pair better in this hand. Do you see players, flop comes and it's not two pair, it's ace high, and they still can't get away from it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, first of all, I think most people don't go in with an actual plan. They see ace nine suited and they raise, and then once they get re-raised, they say, well, I'm not going to let him push me around and I'm going to see the flop. I wanted to see the flop with this hand to begin with. And so they're not really thinking about what I'm going to do post-flop. Am I going to have to hit the hand? If I just call here, I've now given up the lead in the hand, so what's my plan if this guy bets into me? Am I going to just play it for two pair or better? Am I going to try to take it away on the flop, which is, you know, something more common that you're going to need to do in tournaments rather than cash games, is to make some a little bit fancier plays at times and really try to steal pots away because you have to accumulate chips. You know, and in a cash game, you could sit there for hours and double up one time and you're extremely profitable for the night. But yeah, a lot of people do that. They call a raise with, you know, two jacks, and the board comes, or better yet, say they called with like two eights and the board comes like, you know, jack, 10, 4. And now all of a sudden, and they've called to play for their set, and now all of a sudden they say, well, maybe he had ace-king. And that happens all the time. People then post-flop decide, well, maybe they had ace-king, ace-queen, and they actually didn't hit the flop. But if you call pre-flop with a plan to play for two pair or better, then just stick to it on the flop and go with that. It doesn't matter if you're folding the best hand there. You know, and too many people have that ego and they're scared to be bluffed. And, you know, but what happens is you just end up paying off these bigger hands. And, you know, you're right, the guy didn't have a queen, but he had two jacks, you know. And so you end up, and it gets checked down or something like that. And you just lose a little bit bigger pot than you would have had you stuck to your plan.
All right. Okay. Well, our hero does a little check down here. He figures his opponent is either on kings, queens, or ace king. All of them with at least one heart in their hand. So he decides to play his hand on his read and just calls. And then he immediately realizes that re-raise all-in might have been better. So he's kind of channeling you just a little too behind.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, he's put him on those types of hands. And so then what's the answer to that then? If he's got those hands are likely to commit here. And at the same time, the hand like ace king with no heart is likely to commit their chips here. Really, almost any ace king, ace queen, ace jack will probably commit on this flop, especially in a lower stakes game. So if that heart were to come out, it's not only going to kill your action, it might slow you down and prevent you from winning your opponent's stack. And at the same time, if they've got those types of hands, you're getting them to make a mistake by committing on this flop with those hands.
Yeah.
Okay, the pot is $1.50. The turn comes the 7 of spades, making a board of 9 of hearts, ace of hearts, 3 of hearts, 7 of spades. The big blind immediately shoves in with his last $1.16 with little hesitation. At this point, I think we're committed, right?
Yeah, I, with little hesitation, call.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got top two still, and no draw got there yet, and you're getting more than 2-1 on your money, and you still have outs in case you're behind, so you have to call.
I mean, the only thing that's logically beating me here is two aces or two nines. I have one of each of those. People sometimes make a mistake of saying, well, he can't have that because I have these. Play a high volume of poker, and you see that it happens a lot. So don't ever say, well, he can't have this because I've got these in my hand. You know, you're just gonna run into those situations where it does happen and it's just a cooler. But in this case, you played this hand for your two pair. There's no reason to think you're not good. And if he happens to have one of the two hands that beats you, he, you know, sure, he could have two sevens and have played them weird. Two threes is extremely unlikely, but the two sevens is even more unlikely here. So yeah, I gotta think I'm good, and I'm not even thinking twice, and I'm not gonna be nervous as Alan was here. You shouldn't be nervous in these spots. You've got the situation you looked for. If you ran into a cooler, well, then that just sucks. Reload and go on to the next hand.
All right, so our hero does immediately call. His opponent turns over queen of clubs, queen of diamonds.
Wow.
So not even a heart.
Wow.
The river is a 10 of hearts, getting the flush there, but not that it matters now. And our hero takes down a nice pot of $3.60. And his opponent goes on what sounds like a pretty lengthy tirade against our hero for making horrible, horrible plays in this hand. Can we heap on the villain here, or do we think our guy survived all right?
I think our villain should just take all of those comments and type them back to themselves. what happened here was he had his two queens. He made a smallish raise, raising only 2.5x out of position. Whenever I'm out of position, I like to raise a little bit more just to compensate for the fact that I will be playing out of position. It's okay to also always keep an exact standard amount that you're raising. Like, you never want to vary your bets based on what you're holding. So pre-flop, once there's been that raise to 8 cents, I'm gonna raise to at least 24, maybe even 30 cents. But he made it only 25 cents more, or no, 20 total. Yeah, so I'm gonna go between 24 and 30 rather than 20 pre-flop. That may get the ace nine out of there, which is fine. People fall into that trap of, I've got a big hand, so I want to get action. And as you can see, sometimes you don't really want action. Now, secondly, the villain should have led at this flop 100% of the time. You have somebody who's raised early position, and then they've just called you. Well, you should just fire. Like, it makes sense that you should have an ace. Maybe they have two jacks, two tens. Maybe they had two kings and were playing them tricky, and you could actually get two kings to fold if you fire out at this flop, and someone with two kings will be all discouraged that you probably had ace jack and you flopped your ace and they just give up on their hand, so you can actually get a better hand to fold sometimes. So I think the villain should have definitely bet the flop. Once he bets the flop, then I think Alan raises and the queens can just safely get out of there. But the way he played this, by check raising and then jamming, there's just so little value to that play, because when he makes that jam after being called, he's only going to get called by better hands, and all worse hands are going to fold. He's going to get two jacks. If, you know, the guy with queens, like say Alan has two jacks with the jack of hearts or two tens with the ten of hearts, he might have stuck around a little bit longer. And sure, you're going to get a flush draw to fold, but maybe. but a lot of times, whenever anybody's got any kind of flush draw, they stick around anyway. So if you potentially won't get a hand like that to fold, then I'd like to go ahead and and get the money in if I think I'm good. But once he's been raised, like if he led at the flop and then Alan raises him, it's a pretty should be a pretty easy fold with queens. And to check raise the flop and jam the turn, it's going to be, I think more often than not, you're only going to get called by someone with just an ace. I mean, it seemed like Alan, if I'm in the queen's position there, I feel like Alan has at least an ace. I mean, he did raise an early position, and he's shown aggression on the flop, and I really don't like the shove on the turn there by the queens.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is, you know, they always try to tell you that, you know, listen to the story, and if it doesn't add up, then you know you've got the winner, and that's what happens here. It seems to me, when this guy check raises, he's trying to tell Alan that he has a flush draw. And then when Alan calls, now he's saying, oh no, my queens aren't good, this guy must be on a flush draw, let me shove. So anybody who shoves on the turn after check raising is telling you that, all right, I was telling you I had a flush draw, but now I'm telling you I don't want your flush draw to get there. So clearly the story doesn't add up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's either that or it is that big hand, but I think the big hand, I think if that this player had re-raised pre-flop with any ace whatsoever, he's betting out on the flop.
Yeah.
Because people are, in general, scared of flush draws.
Yeah.
And much more scared than they should be most of the time, especially in a heads-up pot. But, you know, in this case, there are three on the board. So if I had two aces, if I had ace-king, if I had ace-queen, if I had, you know, any ace at all, I'm betting this flop on. If I have two jacks, I'm betting this flop as the pre-flop aggressor. So to check raise and then jam without even having an ace, without even having a heart, that's pretty bad. But you know, I like that Alan went with it, and I'm glad he, you know, didn't get too nervous and fold here, thinking maybe his player had a set or something.
Well, we're glad that Alan went with it too, Lee. In addition to that monster $3.60 pot, he's also won a lovely card protector from PokerFaces.tv, and we'll send that out to him right away. Lee, it's been awesome having you on.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. And also keep in mind that was over 150 big blind pot. Even though it doesn't seem that big to you, that's a massive pot, and that's why we play these hands like this, is we're going to play a hand like that for two pair or better so we can stack our opponent, and he was able to do it.
All right, Lee, well, thanks for joining us today, and I want to thank Robert Daly for joining us as well. It was another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.